Welcome to NC State's Audio Abstract. I'm your host, Tracy Peek. Ever wondered how humans or our robot proxies might explore an asteroid? NC State physicist Karen Daniels has. Recently, she and several undergraduate students conducted experiments on low-gravity digging while in zero gravity aboard a parabolic flight. Karen and senior Tristan M. join us today to talk about the challenges of asteroid exploration, how we might overcome them, and whether or not a ride on the Vomit Comet lived up to its name. Welcome, Karen and Tristan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start off by asking the most obvious question to a non-scientist. Why can't we just land a spaceship on an asteroid?
Well, we've certainly seen people do it in movies, and it looks realistic when they do it. So it might seem surprising that there's a problem. But actually, just today in my physics class, we calculated, you know, how many G-force you get on the surface of, say, a small planet or a large planet. And in fact, small planets, because they're not very massive, tend to have low Gs as a result. And so because of that, any material that's on them, if it's not actually solidly part of the body, can easily be bumped off. And the escape velocity is extremely small.
So an asteroid, if it's not actually just a big solid hunk of rock in space, if you landed on it and it was made up of like grains sort of loosely held together, they'd all just kind of
We don't really know, actually. We had few enough experiences, but we do know how to calculate the escape velocity. And for many small asteroid bodies, you know, sort of the football stadium size to kilometer size, it's going to be a few inches per second is the escape velocity. So it's quite likely that we cause large disturbances. We have, in fact, landed safely on asteroids. We have missions that have landed. However, most of them haven't gone as well as we would have hoped. There were bounces and tumbles, and we had trouble getting information back. So we know that there have been challenges, and to what extent those are associated with them being low gravity bodies is part of what makes this something that's of interest to study.
You're going to set out and study this. And since we can't just ship you off to an asteroid somewhere and see what happens when you land on it, we have to design experiments to do that. So what is your idea for figuring out how we might want to land?
Yeah, as Dr. Daniel said, one of the biggest problems with attempting to land on an asteroid is, I guess we identified two problems. One is extremely low gravity, like a baby could sit on an asteroid and throw a ball and it could escape, depending on the asteroid. And the second is that, unlike in the movies, it's not like this big solid chunk of rock. A lot of it will have surface regolith, or as you said, like gravel pretty much, or soil of some sort. Everything's at the surface and it's very loose. And combine that with the fact that it's a very low gravity environment, it's like, okay, well, how do we land on this?
Right.
So there are a few ways to try. What most landing missions have done is they kind of fire harpoons at it, which, as ESA found out, is not always a great idea. So that's why we tried to look into, you know, how do the grains react to, I guess, probing at different speeds? How much ejecta or how much dirt do we get flying up off the ground in various gravitational environments based on what velocity we poke the dirt with? That's what we set out to look at.
So another way of thinking about this is, you know, we have, as we know in our human interactions, you can, you know, force somebody to do something, or you can gently influence somebody to do something. And I think that it's worth trying some interaction ideas where instead of hitting an asteroid very hard and fast and hoping to make an impact that way, that you sneak something flexible between the grains, and that is a possibly more successful strategy. Much like roots are able to grow down into dirt. Roots are actually quite weak. Dirt, as we know from digging in North Carolina soil, can be, you know, quite difficult to dig into when you work with a shovel. So maybe something that's flexible and sneaks between the grains would be an easier way to make the same problem work without generating ejecta.
So you would have something like an anchor that would kind of creep into in between the grains, and then the spaceship could kind of, or the probe or whatever,
exactly,
could follow
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it'd be like a much slower, lower impulse way of anchoring yourself to.
And maybe you'd need many of these ultimately to do the trick, and maybe they need to link up. But it's just the beginnings of if you will, you know, civil engineering in an unfamiliar environment. So we're used to civil engineering on Earth's environment. We have Earth gravity and we have cohesive, I mean, our dirt on this planet tends to be cohesive. It sticks together. We don't really know that much about the regolith and other environments.
So you guys designed an experiment that would essentially probe this dirt or regolith in different levels of gravity. And in order to do these experiments on Earth, you have to ride in a parabolic flight, a plane that makes parabolic flights, big swooping arcs in the sky, also known as the Vomit Comet in common vernacular. So tell us a little bit about how that experiment works. You load it onto this jet, and then what happens? Walk us through kind of what a parabolic flight is like and what you guys do.
Well, so actually we spent basically a day and a half down at the launch site. Not really a launch site. Basically an airport.
Yeah,
so we sat at the airport.
Everything.
So they have a regular, what looks like a commercial plane, but with very big cargo doors on the side. And they carry our experiment out there on a forklift. And we're allowed to go up and bolt it down and do test runs in Earth's gravity and make sure that things, you know, are hopefully all set up as we planned. This was fairly stressful. Of course, not everything went exactly as, you know, we had hoped, you know. And then we all go to sleep and we eat a light dinner. And the next morning we get up and half of our crew went the first day. And so I watched Tristan walk off with Riley Reed, another NC State student, and one of our collaborators from the University of Central Florida. And they boarded, we watched them board the plane, and then we waited. And so from the ground, it was nerve-wracking because we'd spent many months building these experiments, and we had no idea if they were going to be successful up there. And I'll let Tristan explain what happened.
Myself, Riley, and Sean got on the plane. There are some seats in the back that you just strap down into for takeoff, the beginning of cruising. And then once you're at cruising altitude, they give you the clear to get out of your seat, walk over to your experiment. They give you some time to make sure everything's operational. If you need to make any last-minute changes while you're at cruising altitude, you're allowed to do that. And then once every team gives their go, they go ahead and they pull up at about 1.8 G, so you're gonna feel about twice as heavy as normal. And then right after that, they'll yell pushing over, and then that's when they start the dive into this parabolic curve. And the first dive we did was in Martian gravity. I believe we did 3 Martian gravity, and that's about 1/3 that of Earth's. So you feel about 1/3 of your weight, and you kind of bounce around. And you're like, okay, well, that's pretty cool. And then after that, you go into lunar and then eventually into microgravity. And in terms of the actual experiment, we had 3 people. So the experiment was split into 2 slightly different experiments. There was a 2-dimensional one, which allowed us to see how force change propagated through the regolith or the dirt. And then the bottom half was a 3D experiment that had actual crushed gravel. It was basalt, but it was crushed into like a fine powder with a mix of slightly rougher pieces in there. And that was under vacuum, and that also was tested.
One of the techniques that my lab uses is that because we can't see inside of really any soil-like material, it's, you know, they're opaque. So you can't tell, how things are moving inside there. You can't tell how forces is being transmitted. And so as physicists, we want to sort of know the forces on all objects, the velocities of all objects. We want to be able to track everything. And this helps us inform our theories of how the world works. So we, as physicists, have tended to use plastic fake sand. And so by using a polymer fake sand, polymers have some interesting optical properties that if we use a flat layer of them, we can actually see which of the grains are transmitting forces and which ones are not supporting any forces. And what we see is that when you push on one of these materials, the forces are often transmitted through chain-like structures, so grain to grain to grain in a line. So one of the advantages of using 2-dimensional materials is that we can see everything. One of the disadvantages is that it's not actually regolith.
Right.
And on the counterpoint is on the 3-dimensional experiments, we're using something that's much more like regolith. It's simulated regolith that is created by our collaborators at UCF. But that material, we can't see what's going on. So in both experiments, we can conduct mechanical probes where we measure the forces as we insert a flexible probe into the material. And in one of the two experiments, we can see what's going on. In the other experiments, we can't see as much. And so we hope that by doing both kinds of experiments, we can have the best of both worlds.
You did your experiments for 2 days?
Yep.
Was it?
So the second day, a different 3 people went up. And we knew some things that already had gone wrong the first day.
Yep.
So you could correct your errors.
So we had some time that evening and the next morning to get there early and make some adjustments. And we definitely fixed some things. And then the second day we went up, and I was up that day. And it was fascinating for me. So we hadn't been there to see what they saw. We only saw what we saw. We certainly had times when we were either starting or finishing the experiment where you accidentally pushed too hard on the button on the experiment.
Yep.
Newton's laws, they really are a thing.
Yeah, you don't think about it while you're on the ground, but when you're floating and you push something, you tend to float backwards.
You've got your data. What are the next steps with this process?
So we've downloaded all the data, and we've got it on our servers in the lab, and we have students who are doing two things with it. Some of us are actually taking the scientific data and trying to look to see if some of our ideas are borne out by the data. That, you know, how hard you have to push and how many grains are disturbed depends on whether we are flying it Martian or lunar or zero gravity. And so we have both camera images and we've got force sensor images from the diggers. And so now we're into data analysis mode. What I would hope to get from it is two things. So one is we, having not flown on one of these before, we were new to engineering a scientific apparatus that would work in this environment. So some of the things that didn't go as well as we hoped, it was because we were beginners at that. We're now not beginners.
So that's good.
And so we hope. So NASA talks about advancing the technological readiness level, right? And so by doing these experiments, we advance our readiness level at conducting experiments that would then help us lead us to the kinds of things you're talking about, where we actually can propose better protocols.
All right. And aside from Newton's law being a thing, and when you push, you kind of fly away from the experiment, what were the biggest surprises? Or a surprise, something you were not expecting?
So I had been warned, but didn't fully believe it until I flew, of the whole process of doing an experiment runs extremely quickly. So you go out 20 seconds in double gravity. You've got a couple seconds where they switch over. You got 20 seconds in zero gravity and a few seconds to switch over. And you do 5 of these in a row before they give you a little break. And so for me, it's like the experience a bit of having trouble keeping up with some 80s aerobics class, right? Where there's always something else. Because we had choreographed what we were supposed to do to start each experiment and to get safely out of the experiments. But then you push off the experiment too hard. You're pushing off over to somebody else's apparatus. They're going to get mad at you. There's a half dozen of us in the plane, and we don't want to mess up someone else's experiment.
Right.
And so sort of just the work to just accomplish this basic task of sit up, push the button, watch it to make sure it's going well,
yeah,
and then lie back down when they say that you're coming out of gravity, and doing that again 5 times in a row without screwing up, that took a fair bit of effort.
I never thought of that.
And it didn't seem like it should be that hard to do. Sit up, push a button, lie back down.
But
it actually was. And that's, again, because this is a new environment where humans, you know, aren't so used to operating.
Right.
There's definitely an amount of sensory overload when you do it for the first time.
And speaking of sensory overload, my final question is, you know, they call this thing the vomit comet.
Indeed.
Did you all make it through?
So we didn't all make it. About 10% of the people flying made it.
5/6 of us made it.
Yeah, so of our team, 5/6 made it.
Okay, good.
We did have one casualty.
But I would say that they actually do some things to teach us to not throw up.
Oh.
So among as they advise, you know, using drugs that suppress nausea. They actually said that all beginners should be lying down during the 2G stretches because that way we'd have a chance to rest and not make it worse.
Right.
They warned us against spinning around for fun.
So that could damage the experiments too, spinning out of control.
But they also say that once you start to get sick, you won't get unsick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it just
gets worse.
Negative loop of vomit.
Yeah. Okay. So the staff are all standing up and moving around just fine.
Yeah.
They're not getting sick. They're used to it. But as beginners, we were advised to take it pretty easy. And I will say the last few parabolas, we started relaxing it on ourselves a bit and had a little bit more fun moving around. Because at that point, we were already feeling a bit more confident.
thank you so much for being here and telling us about the experiment, the work you're doing, and the experience that you guys had aboard the Parabolic Flights. This has been NC State's Audio Abstract. I've been talking with Karen Daniels, physicist at NC State, and Tristan M., a senior here at NC State. My name is Tracy Peake. Thank you so much for listening.